You're listening to EPN, the ePodcast Network.
Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network, your channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who share business strategies and insights that can all help you build your business, leading to your business success. And now, broadcasting from anywhere between Brazil, South America to Los Angeles, California, it is your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Today, we are visiting with Mr. Greg Centineo, the man CEOs call upon to turn great ideas into reality through thoughtful team leadership and the ability to attract large numbers of people to a common goal. Mr. Centineo, a pleasure to have you with us today on Enterprise Radio.
Hey, Eric. Thanks so much for having me. Good to be here with you and your audience.
And you're more than welcome. Our pleasure. So for starters, what are a few common problems you see with the approach of CEOs toward fundraising, also towards their teams and toward growing the business as a whole?
Yeah, that's a great question, Eric. You know, typically before I start promoting a project, you know, when I go into a situation, one of the problems I normally look at or try to find is the inability to for a CEO or a team to actually know their story. Inside and out. A lot of times there's a lot of fragmentation, and story is so important, especially if you're going to be capitalizing your company. Understanding the story is really essential, not only for the CEO, but also for the team around them. It plays a huge part in communicating to potential investors, potential strategic partners, and you would be shocked at how often that the leadership teams, including the CEOs, just don't really know their story.
So tell us, what changes can companies make to meet their financial and fundraising goals?
Well, I think a lot. I think sometimes, you know, if they're having problems raising funds, you know, there's typical reasons for that. One is what we just mentioned, story. You know, investors buy into story, which is really important. You know, the story is not just the idea, but it's what's behind the idea. You know, the questions such as, does this really matter, you know? And so that's really important. If it makes sense, you know, to an investor, they typically will do something. On top of that, you know, investors, you know, look for the idea of the story. You know, if it's a good idea and they think other people think it's a good idea, then that's something that, you know, kind of triggers an investor to get involved. And so that's why story is so important. The second element that an investor, and probably the most important, Eric, is leadership. So once an investor passes the first hurdle, which is, do they like the idea? The next obstacle they're going to look at is leadership. And the question that they're going to be asking themselves is, does the leadership team have the abilities to execute? And they're watching, they're listening, they're observing everything that the leadership does and says in those meetings. So I always tell, you know, CEOs and executives, prepare them when we meet investors, you know, to be careful what they're saying, you know, how they're saying, and I give you a case in point. A lot of CEOs, I have to tell them, lose half of their vocabulary, Eric, because everything is so positive about what they're doing and their idea and their project. You know, it's wonderful. It's amazing. It's going to do so well. It's going to make millions of dollars, et cetera, et cetera. And what ends up happening is the potential investors that are listening to that are really making their analysis, saying this leader has no idea what he's doing. And he's living with rose glasses on, and they lose faith in his competence to lead and to build a company. And so I always like to encourage, you know, these leaders that you know, investors aren't looking for the total mitigation of risk. They're actually looking for the risk. They want to know that there's risk there, you know? And the reason is because they know without risk, there's no return. So without risk or the acknowledgement of risk, the leadership is blind. So they're looking for risk. And more importantly, once they see the risk, then they analyze the leadership, which is vital, and their assessment, whether that leadership can actually execute and get the project done. And that's basically how it works. And so I believe I've done it, You know, and it's at times for me, Eric, I've had to, you know, realign or actually restructure leadership teams, restructure, reframe stories so that it's understood and the things I just shared with you, and do that in order to get what we call a clear flow of investor participation in a company. Does that make sense?
It certainly does make sense, and a fine breakdown on that as well. Now, what is a problem that you most commonly see before you start promoting a project?
A lot of times it's the leadership team is they're so far into the project that they kind of lose perspective, which is normal. You know, they don't see things the way they really are at times, and you get so diluted into what you're doing that you kind of your total perspective is lost. So it's helping them kind of get a more of a bird's eye view of the company, a better approach, and even sometimes looking at present strategies that they have in place and paths that they were actually choosing to take that really, you know, don't really apply anymore. So, and a lot of times, you know, it's because there's so much passion and emotion built into these startups or these companies that, you know, you kind of, you lose that focus. And so it's sometimes my job to go in there and help bring, a paradigm shift, if you would, to the leadership team so they can get a better perspective of what it is they're doing in the time that they're now doing it.
Most helpful response today. We are joined by Mr. Greg Centineo, who many people have said that if had a title, it could be Transformer, Storyteller, or Seeker of Meaning here on Enterprise Radio, a part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Now, Mr. Centineo, how were you able to raise so much money for Legends of Oz, Dorothy's Return?
Man, that was an amazing achievement for everybody involved in that project, from the production company, the team that helped, capitalize that franchise, to the cast, the producers. I mean, that was an amazing endeavor. And what ends up happening, that was a process, which we had to really look at. That time frame, Eric, was during the recession, so obviously, every major investment contemporary investment was on fire at the time. You had the Bernie Madoff announcement in 2008. So we were facing some really big obstacles. But the project itself, was an improbability. So the fact that we launched that worldwide, 4,000 screens, we employed 3,300 people around the world in that endeavor. The total capital raised, including P&A, was about $122 million. And that was done, through what we call just genuine education, educating people about what we were doing, why we were doing what we were doing. Basically what I mentioned to you before, telling our story, why we're doing it, what was behind our idea, what we believed about what we were doing, what we saw if we achieved what we were doing, and being very honest in the much of the early years of that project, just being honest with potential investors and saying we probably won't succeed even getting it to market is the reality, because we knew it was such a mountain to climb. But it was through really great education. And this is what I kind of teach, CEOs and startups around the country, around the world, these principles of really educating people as to what it is that you're doing, and knowing your project really well. And we always touted ourselves for knowing what we were doing, understanding what we were doing, and being able to clearly communicate what it is that we were doing, including, as I mentioned earlier, the risk that was associated with what we were doing on top of the potential reward. It was a long process. It was a grind, as you can imagine, but it was filled with many, many touch points of how to get information to people so they can ascertain, understand, keeping respect for those that we were speaking to. So you never want to, we never wanted to make somebody or sell somebody into doing something. We wanted them to make their own decisions. And so we always gave, the time. We never closed. That's something that most people are shocked when they hear. We never had a close on it. We would just process and answer questions and create relationships and dialogues that would go on sometimes for weeks and even a couple of months before somebody would make a decision to yes or no. And then because the project took on, began to take on so much momentum, and it was having good results and was achieving at different levels along the way, people got excited about it. I mean, we all did. And people started to talk to friends and family about it. And, we had a lot of great press about the project. So there was a lot that led into that. But in the early days, first 4 or 5 years of that project, I mean, it was a climb, as you can imagine.
I bet. Now, what are some tips you can give to someone trying to raise funds for their own project?
Wow, that's a great question. I mean, you know, every project's different. I mean, you know, I can give you the basic essentials, and, you know, even that, I've recently now started putting the stuff together so I can help startups. Obviously, I can't meet with everybody that wants to talk to me, so I am doing things now that are allowing this information, this knowledge to be transferred. But every situation is different, Eric. I mean, you know, but I think, like I said earlier, you have to really understand what it is that you're doing and why you're doing it. The why behind everything in life is so vital, including your startups or your companies. And, you know, the world around us, you know, I always say this, I mean, everybody is an investor. I mean, because everybody wants to make money. You know, you show me one person, and sure, it's not out of 7 billion people, maybe it's 6 billion, 900 million that want to make money. My point is, everybody's out every day trying to make money. So if you're doing something that gives the potential for somebody to make money, then they're a potential investor. So you should be able to clearly communicate, articulate. It's why they call me a storyteller. I am not a liar, a storyteller. I understand the story behind what we're doing. And that story evolves. And I think it's really important for anyone out there that's trying to capitalize their company that you do a responsible job of telling your story, the big why behind it. I mean, I had my why, and my why drove me every single day. And, you know, and that passion behind what I was doing, Eric, that's felt when you're speaking to people. I mean, I was – every time I did a meeting, we walk away and the person would say, look, I don't know if you're going to succeed or not, but I got to tell you, your passion is inspiring to me. And so that's important, that you really believe in what you're doing. Belief is vital, you know. And I say it now, I don't do anything that I don't believe in. Because otherwise I ain't going to have any passion behind it. And it's what passion literally is, an energy that has the ability to kind of will things into existence, you know? And so people that have jobs or occupations or are part of something that they're not interested in, or they don't really believe in, they're passionless, right? And so it's mundane. There's no life to it. I always use an example. If we were to go horseback riding, Eric, and I took you into a stable, and there were two horses, and one was standing, and the other one was dead. And I said, Eric, you pick the horse you want to ride. You would immediately gravitate right over to the one that was alive. Why? It's alive. It has energy. So the one that's dead, there's no sense of going over to it. Well, you know, sometimes people are the living dead, you know. Even though they're breathing and they're looking at you and talking to you, doesn't mean they're alive. So there's no passion. So people are drawn to passion like a magnet. And so the things that I involve myself with, whether they succeed or not, they're passion driven. In other words, we will put into it everything we have to make it happen.
Phenomenal explanation. I like that. Now, shifting gears to hiring the right people, which is a huge, huge ordeal to one's business success. Do you have some guidelines you recommend for hiring the right people for the right positions on a team? And what are some red flags that someone isn't the right fit?
Yeah, man, it's a great question. So if you just take some of the things I just said, you can actually apply those, you know. As you know, I find people all the time. I mean, I can find an Uber driver, right, that I'm talking to and I can feel his energy or her energy, and I realize, wow, this person's got something. And because they're driving Uber, I don't make a judgment and say, well, this person's, you know, is no good, or, you know, could never do what I'm – no. Matter of fact, most of my teams that I've built over the last 15 years were people that had absolutely no experience in the industries that we were working in. I went out and hired outside of the industry. I hired good people. People that have those same characteristics that I kind of mentioned in the earlier answers, you know, that are passionate, that have good work ethic, discipline, that believe they can do anything in this world. And when you start to hire right, you know, like I say, you can always train somebody to do something, right? But you can't train somebody to be a good person, right? You can't train somebody to work hard. You can't train somebody to be willing to run through walls to make something happen. You can't train somebody to believe whatever it takes, You know what I mean? And a lot of times people would say, what is the role? What is the job description? I say, with job description, I said, it's whatever it takes. That's what it means. We do whatever it takes to succeed. And so, you know, that's not a 9-to-5 job, right? That's not an occupation. That's a role that you take on. So you find people, you know, and they're everywhere, you know, and I've done that. I've taken, you know, moms, you know, who've had 4 kids and swooped them right up and brought them into my organization, and they turned out to be all stars for me, you know, and nobody would have gave them a shot because they didn't see what I saw in them, you know, but there were characteristics that I look for, and I'm always looking for those things. And another thing that's really important, Eric, is, you know, a lot of times we prejudge people and we kind of dismiss people in public. I don't. I talk to as many people as I can in life. I really do, because I know there's gems all over the place. Hidden gems that haven't been found yet. And I've been really good at that, finding people, giving people a chance, seeing in them what I believe that's dug down deep inside them. I believe if I can just kind of dust it off and nurture it, I can transform them and have them perform at high levels. And that's my job as a leader, to nurture the people around me. You see some of my titles, I do transformation leadership, which means it's leadership that transforms people. It changes people's lives, not only, you know, themselves, but people that are involved in the projects that we do. So those are really important facets. Don't get locked into I don't even look at resumes. I'm not interested in the resume. I can care less. You know, half of them aren't the truth anyway. So I don't read resumes. I don't really care about education. I mean, I listen about education, but that doesn't drive me. You pick people and you give people opportunities who you believe will take that opportunity and run with it. I remember one of my hires, she would continually come into my studio and say to me, I just want to thank you so much for the opportunity. And she'd come in every other day and thank me. And I finally, one day, about 4 months into this, she walked in. I said, listen, you come in here one more time and thank me. I said, I'm going to fire you. And she laughed. She said, I said, no, let me explain this to you. I'm not that good of a guy. I said, I gave you an opportunity, right? If you would have blown the opportunity, you wouldn't be here today. I gave you the opportunity, but you actually did something with it. That's why you're still here, you know? So, you know, you give people a chance. You give them an opportunity. I always say to people my whole life, I said, I didn't want handouts. Just give me an opportunity. Give me a chance. Let me in, and I'll show you what I can do. And that's what I continue to do to people, give people opportunities.
Great story and a great example. Thanks for sharing that and taking the time to do so. Now, when a company needs a position filled in order to move forward, is it better to get someone who may not be the perfect fit to have someone for now, or is it better to figure out how to work without that position filled for a period of time, or what are the pros and cons of either decision?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll tell you this. You know, I don't rush into any decisions when I bring people onto my team. It's difficult when you don't make the right hire, you know? So, I'd rather do without, Eric, you know, rather than bring on the wrong person. Yeah. My process of interviewing can take up to 45 days and, you know, it's not traditional. It's going out, dinners, talking, you know, games, baseball games, hockey games. It's a plethora of activities where I get to see people. I meet their family. You know, I want to see everything about them because, you know, what you're taking in, you're taking in. You know, you're not just hiring a person, you're hiring a community. And what is their community like? What, you know, that's what you're inheriting. So for me, it's a 45-day process where I really get to know people. So I feel if there's a good chemistry. And again, that doesn't mean there's not going to be arguments, there's not going to be turmoil at times. There is, but you want people that can argue with you, right? And you can still walk away and agree to disagree. And more importantly, you want people to be thinkers. You know, you want people to be independent that work with you. So for me, that's the positive to that is you might do without for a while, but you make the wrong decision and you got to do with something for a while. And that can bring a lot of stress and turmoil to your organization. And it could literally break up the algorithm to what your team has. And so that's a really bad, that's a big negative. You fill a position, but you destroy the algorithm of your team, not good, man. So for me, it's really important. Chemistry plays a big role. As a matter of fact, I don't do the hiring. You know, I make decisions, but I bring my existing team members in, and they actually also meet these people and spend time with them. Why? Because they're joining a community, right? They're joining a team, and there's got to be overall chemistry. And it doesn't mean, you know, unity is an interesting word, Eric. You know, unity doesn't mean we all think the same. For me, unity means we all think differently. We all are different, but we're still unified with diversity. See, there's no such thing as unity without diversification, right? So the fact that everyone's diversified and you're unified, that's the true essence of unity. So you want your team to kind of get to know everybody that's going to be coming in. And what it does, it's not always perfect, but you've done a lot of the labor, a lot of the legwork to ensure that this is probably going to be a pretty good addition to your team.
Well, Mr. Centineo, and it certainly has been our pleasure to have had you. Some real rich information shared here today, and we can't thank you enough for your time. Where can listeners get further information on yourself, and how could they also be in touch?
Sure, Eric. You can go to my website, gregcentineo.com. It's spelled C-E-N-T, cent, and then I-N-E-O. And there's plenty of information on the website that you can look at, and obviously contact different ways that you can hopefully be helped by some of these principles and some of these experiences.
Again, Mr. Centineo, it has been our pleasure to have had you. Continued success, and thanks for taking a moment to be with us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks, Eric.
We have been speaking with Mr. Greg Centineo, the man CEOs call upon to turn great ideas into reality through thoughtful team leadership and the ability to attract large numbers of people to a common goal. And for more details and for contact, visit gregcentineo.com. And this is Eric Dine. You've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Check out our new live location as we are now streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live, with a new app coming soon to accompany our live stream in the coming weeks. And once again, as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks again for listening to Enterprise Radio here on the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. To subscribe for future programming, simply visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.